Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson, Director of Friends of the Eel River. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU, brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. The cultural complex that dominates the Earth in the early 21st century, which we often think of as industrial society, is a civilization dependent on a variety of technologies which are themselves based on knowledge, knowledge acquired by the practice of science. If anything, the United States is built on science to an even greater extent in practical and philosophical senses. Scientific understanding has been the foundation for much of the disproportionate wealth and power the U.S. has built over the last century. And yet, lines of scientific inquiry, and even entire disciplines, which appear to threaten or undermine powerful interests in our society, have come under an increasingly ideological kind of attack in the U.S. over the last several decades. The politicized pushback against science, an enterprise which scientists themselves has long understood as a studiously apolitical search for objective truths, is only one aspect of a larger tendency, a growing assertion that no knowledge is neutral, but what's true is whatever our side believes. Still, this developing allergy to science we don't like seems especially dangerous when so much depends on our collective ability to make well-informed decisions. Unfortunately, we now see alarming indications that the Trump administration and the present Republican majority in Congress are eager to undermine science that conflicts with their policy preferences. I'm joined today by two people who are helping to organize the Humboldt County March for Science in response to these developments. Ross Taylor works locally as a consulting fisheries biologist specializing in fish passage assessment and project monitoring. Ross also serves as the State Water Board's fisheries expert in the Mono Lake Basin, monitoring trout populations in streams subject to diversion by the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. Jessica Haba teaches science to 6th and 7th graders at Sunny Bray Middle School. She also serves on the board of the Mad River Alliance, which is sponsoring the Humboldt County March for Science. Welcome to the Eco News Report, Jessica and Ross. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Scott.
Thank you for having us.
So let's just start by talking about what the March for Science is and why, in your view as organizers, it's needed.
Well, the March for Science started in Washington, D.C. soon after the Women's March, where scientists were very concerned about the White House removing the climate page off the White House website and started to put freezes on EPA research and science. I joined the national page on Facebook when there was about 30,000 people on it. 2 days later, there were over 300,000 people. And so myself and several people locally decided to do a March for Science in Humboldt County.
At that rate of growth, the entire population's got to be on by now.
Well, there's over 400 sister city marches that are going to occur on Earth Day, the same day as the National March.
Excellent. I'm remembering that even before the inauguration of the Trump administration, scientists across the country were working feverishly to download government data from government websites and trying to protect it. Have you guys seen anything around those issues yet?
Not myself personally, but I've certainly read some stories in the Washington Post and the New Yorker magazine just about that fact that scientists were worried that that data would not be available in the near future.
I personally haven't experienced it either, at least with the data, but I do know colleagues that are working with federal agencies or other nonprofits that are worried about losing funding as related to science.
So we'll come back to this at the end of the show, but let's make sure people have the details on when and where the Humboldt County March for Science is going to be and who they can get in touch with to participate.
Sure. The Humboldt March for Science will occur on April 22nd, the same day as Earth Day and all the other marches happening in the United States and around the world. We will start the day with a science-based expo at the D Street Neighborhood Center in Arcata, just south of the Humboldt State University campus.
At the Science Expo, we're going to have hands-on demonstrations, county science fair projects, HSU student posters showcasing their work that they have been doing.
And the expo will run from about 9 a.m. till about 1:30 in the afternoon. We're going to hold it inside the D Street Neighborhood Center, possibly some tabling outside if the weather is nice. There will be face painting on site for the kids of all ages, and we'll be serving some light breakfast fare. And all day long, we hope to have a couple food trucks parked on site as well.
So then the march.
So then we're going to have a rally in the D Street cul-de-sac, and that is going to start at about 2 o'clock. And we're going to have different speakers from different aspects of the community to talk about why science is important and the purpose of the march and their experience with science and dealing with the administration.
Yeah, and we're trying to line up local speakers to really capture the diversity of science in our area. And, you know, the one asset we have, or one of the many assets we have as Humboldt State University, has produced so many scientists in this area that have stayed in the area to work professional careers, be it in the state or federal, county level, or with consultants or NGOs or tribes. And we have a couple speakers confirmed, and we're working on, I think, a pretty good list of speakers with a little local live music mixed in. The rally is going to go from about 2 to 3 o'clock, and then we'll march into downtown Arcata. The exact parade route is not determined yet, but we're working with the city on it, and we will go around the plaza.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greason with Friends of the Eel River, and I'm talking today with Jessica Haba and Ross Taylor about the Humboldt County March for Science, and more broadly about what some writers have called the war on science. We can hope, I guess, that the Trump administration might represent the ultimate low point of official contempt for science and its dangerous fruit. But, you know, it's hardly the case that the Republican Party has only come to its present hostility for science during Trump's ascension to power. Chris Mooney, who now writes for the Washington Post, wrote a book published in 2005 that became a bestseller, The Republican War on Science, which explained a number of arenas in which the Republican Party was already pushing back against science that contradicted its political positions. He writes about GOP attacks on so-called junk science, a label that appears to mean inconvenient truths in practice, and then talks about how the campaign to weaken a lot of environmental and public health protections was phrased in terms of sound science, which seems to boil down to a policy of demanding high, maybe even impossible levels of certainty in situations where sacred cows might somehow be constrained from wandering. That sounds like it's still the program, that we've got this overall sort of hostility to science that leads to places that are uncomfortable. How do you see this?
Well, I agree with you, Scott, that it runs deeper and farther back than just the Trump administration, that there's been a concerted effort, mostly by the GOP politicians, to discredit science. For example, most of us read that 97% of climate scientists say climate change is real, we're causing it, it's not good for our planet, and there's solutions that can be enacted to correct what is happening and will be happening for a long time. Yet somehow in a lot of the media and press, there still seems to be a almost 50-50 argument about, is climate change real? And you look at other developed nations, and they've gone past that point. The argument is done with them, and they're starting to do something about it. Another spin on that, too, would be, you know, healthcare and women's health. And you know, one thing that we need to think about here is I don't want to say entrenched, but we're so focused on the natural resources sciences in Northern California that there's many other aspects that I really think about going to healthcare and women's health, and there's definitely an attack on that. And again, you look at those other developed countries, and they have universal health care for all their citizens, and it's not a debate. It's not rigged to favor the few. It's rigged to help everyone when they need that help.
Mike Furness, a friend of all of ours, I think, who is doing a lot of work these days on adapting to sea level rise and climate change in the developing world, has suggested that one important reason those societies are responding differently to alarming messages from the world of science is that where the political leadership of the United States is overwhelmingly made up of lawyers, in developing countries, the leadership class tends to be predominantly engineers or scientists. People trained to solve problems, as against people trained to debate, to argue against about liability, and to defend existing power arrangements. Now, forget for a moment, if you can, that I'm a lawyer. And do you think we'd be better served if we elected scientists instead of lawyers?
I definitely think we'd be better served if we elected scientists to make scientific decisions.
Why?
Because they have the training and the experience and the background to be able to objectively look at the facts and make those decisions and understand the science and the process that came to those conclusions. Just like, I mean, as a teacher myself, I would like to see people that are leading the education system haven't been a teacher before, because then you have experienced what it's like and you understand it on a deeper level than just reading it in a book. I would believe that it would at least serve us to have some elected officials be scientists.
I read a real interesting commentary about a week ago that summarized science and facts right now. If you had a leaky sink, would you hire a plumber that was experienced in plumbing to fix it because he or she knew what they were doing? Or would you hire somebody who had no clue?
Who's going to disrupt your plumbing system?
Yes. Or if you're sick, you're going to go to a doctor who's gone to school to learn about the medicine and the science that's going to help you. And then on the flip side, a climatologist is struggling to be believed by our government that is controlled by the power companies and the oil companies to make them seem discredible. And why should you hire somebody with experience in climatology to tell you what's wrong with our climate?
This comes to a kind of an uncomfortable point, and I've been hammering on the Republican Party here, but it is the case that all of us evaluate the information that comes into us using filters that are largely constructed by basically the people we like and the people we identify with. We think in terms of more or less tribal allegiances in a way, and I don't mean native peoples, but people we like to be like. And when we raise these issues, especially in terms of what appears from our perspective to be this overwhelming Republican hostility to science, there's often some pushback. Some, hey, you Democrats don't believe in this kind of science, and you don't like that kind of science. And one of the big ones that often gets raised is vaccines. That doesn't fall entirely on ideological lines. But you can certainly see that one of the places in the country that has overwhelmingly left-leaning politics but a very low level of vaccine use relative to the rest of the country is right here in Northwestern California. Can we see anything useful about the way these sort of tribal beliefs shape our interaction with science?
Well, I think that even stems from our politics with the two-party system. And just in the last 8 to 12 years, people have become very entrenched on one side of a fence, and there's not a lot of common ground, and there's not a lot of ability to look at the other person or the other stakeholder's position and try to understand it and work towards a compromise where maybe both of you are not getting everything you want and need, but it's the best solution for most of the population.
The Humble March for Science is an educational, peaceful, nonviolent, inclusive event encouraging solidarity, involvement, and interaction from a diverse community of thinkers who hold science to be valuable in this complex, interconnected world. The Humble March for Science recognizes the role of science as a means by which all people can seek a deeper knowledge and understanding of our world. We come together in unity as a community to advocate for sound public policy, access to science for everyone, and the protection of our planet.
And Ross, you were making a point before we started about how the march is fundamentally a nonpartisan operation.
Yes, it was interesting. When they first formed the Washington, D.C. group, it was going to be the Scientists March on Washington. And they quickly realized they were excluding people that aren't scientists. And so they switched it to the March for Science, acknowledging that everyone in society benefits from certain types of science, be it medicine or when you step on the pedal on the brakes of your car and the car actually slows down. I mean, that was all created by scientific research and design. And it is to be nonpartisan. There's people on both sides of the aisle, all political spectrums, that are worried about what's going on in our government now and the refusal to acknowledge certain types of science in guiding public policy.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greeson. I'm talking today with Jessica Haba and Ross Taylor about the March for Science in Washington, D.C. and here in Humboldt County on Earth Day, April 22nd, and the broader concerns that have sparked the march. Ross, you were just talking about how the March for Science started off as the Scientists' March, but it's actually the case that some scientists aren't all that interested in participating in this. How does that set of concerns get articulated?
It's been hotly debated on the national Facebook page among scientists, and there's been some op-ed pieces written. And some scientists feel that if they speak out, they're falling into the trap of you're politicizing what's supposed to be objective point of view. And also they're worried about that, how we just talked about the two political spectrums being very entrenched and you just listen to what your group is saying. They fear there would be more opinions from the more conservative side of the political spectrum, that scientists are elitist and now they have an agenda and now they're marching and they're pushing that agenda.
That would just make things worse in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. And in my opinion, I think those divisions are there. And if somebody on the right that gets their news from Breitbart or Fox, I don't think we're going to sway anybody's opinion. We're just trying to march and speak out that science is important, and it's going to value all of society, regardless of your political or religious beliefs. It's a really important part of a functional society.
When Humboldt State University wildlife professor Dan Barton and I were discussing the takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in southeast Oregon by heavily armed anti-environmentalists on this show a year ago, Dan expressed his concern that one effect of such open displays of antagonism would be to make it even harder for women and people of color, who are his students, to take the risks entailed in becoming field scientists. How do you see the potential for Trump administration policies to have positive or negative effects on young people who might otherwise be interested in helping to make the community of science one that better reflects who we are as a nation?
Hmm?
When Ross and I were talking before the show, mm-hmm. we suggested that one way to approach this might be to think about things that have been getting better and maybe aren't now. Funding for science,
Funding for science, access mm-hmm. for women, minorities.
The Muslim ban? There's a lot of things.
Because, I would want to talk about it from the educational standpoint, but I feel like in Humboldt County, we're very blessed in that we don't have to follow the prescribed curriculum and what maybe some of the policies would be in place that would, you know, say you can't talk about this or, you know, you have to be on this page this day of the week. So I feel like in Humboldt County, we live in like this little bubble that we don't experience some of the drawbacks that are associated with some of the changes as of yet.
But during our planning for the March for Science, we had some HSU students that were active early on, and they were mostly women, several of Latino descent, and they're very concerned about their ability to access higher education in the science field and be taken seriously and to have that education lead to productive jobs later in their lives. And hopefully we're going to get one of them to speak at the rally about the challenges that she faces in that environment and with that perspective. And I think that's a valuable one to share with the rest of the community.
The problem, too, though, is that I think it's deeper than current policies and changes that might come into place. Women, girls, traditionally in our society, lose interest or stop being involved in science in about middle school because it's perceived as a more male-dominated field. And so I think it's a deeper problem than whether or not who's in office, whether or not women are going to be involved in science.
Indeed. But we have seen a lot of Trump administration policies, even in, you know, the first 70 days of the administration, that pretty clearly, you know, at least pose risks to future scientists. And the one that jumps out at me is the Muslim ban. You know, we've got all these amazing people who are studying in American universities who've just been told, you know, you can't come back. It just seems incredibly counterproductive.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of those people are the brightest in the world, and they're not going to work in jobs in technology and healthcare and all sorts of technical fields that we need and value those people. And they're going to go work elsewhere, other countries. But another part of the first 70 days of the Trump administration that I'm seeing locally is that the huge slash of money going towards the NOAA administration. That's our weather. That's weather satellites, climate satellites. And then even more personally to me as a fisheries biologist is that lots of funding that's been coming to the Western United States for watershed and fisheries restoration, those funding sources are going to take a big hit. And no one really knows how bad that hit's going to be, but it's coming.
When you say NOAA, you mean the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying that. And more directly, the National Marine Fisheries Service that administers and doles out a lot of money for restoration in the Klamath, the Trinity, the Eel River, the Mattole, all our local watersheds where a lot of people are really trying to restore our fish runs.
Yeah, they have principal responsibility for marine mammals and for anadromous sea run fish like salmon and steelhead.
Exactly.
So a lot of this story, you know, the big fight over science has been grounded in a fight over climate change and what it means and what we should do about it. But that's not the whole story. The incoming head of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, just canceled the decision to ban chlorpyrifos, a pesticide which has been identified as a cause of childhood cancers. The new Secretary of the Interior's first official act was to reverse a ban on the use of lead ammunition on Interior Department lands, which would include our system of wildlife refuges. You know, it's not just about climate change, but it does seem like a lot of this stuff is about climate change.
Well, they're also working to dismantle the Endangered Species Act, correct?
Correct. And clean air and clean water. You look at the reversals on stream protection on the East Coast as far as the refuse from coal mining. They're allowed to release that sludge into flowing water bodies that go downstream, and presumably towns and cities are utilizing that water as a drinking source. So some pretty serious stuff.
And we could elaborate a lot of examples. What I'm trying to get at is what's the central thread? Why ignore science? Just because they can? It seems like, as you know, we started the show talking about how much wealth and power we've built using science. Why retreat from it? What's the common thread?
Because it doesn't benefit businesses if you follow what science indicates should happen. The whole idea of cutting the stream protection is to allow businesses to have more leeway to do their work, and that science doesn't support that it's going to be beneficial for the environment.
It's really turning the tide back to maximum profit on resource extraction with mm-hmm. the fewest regulations put on the resource extractor. That's exactly. My opinion.
Exactly. It's money.
And a lot of it goes back to big oil and power generation and kind of squeezing that last bit of coal and fossil fuels out of the system for the big corporations that benefit from those instead of – there's a lot of movement towards other forms of energy, but it really seems like the entrenched powers to be are taking their last run at it.
Well, again, we need to recap for people and remind them where and when the Humboldt March for Science is going to happen.
The Humboldt March for Science takes place Saturday, April 22nd, which is Earth Day. It starts with a science expo from 9 to 1:30 at the D Street Neighborhood Center. There will be a rally from 2 to 3 with some local speakers. And then we will march from the D Street Neighborhood Center down to the plaza and back.
And part of the timing for doing the rally and the march in the afternoon, Scott, was to, one, it's Godwit days, and we want to make sure that all the birders get out there and do their birding all morning long until the early afternoon.
Good.
Godwit days is down at the big community center. We're a few blocks north there, so they can easily walk between the two activities. And also not to conflict with the farmer's market down on the Arcata Plaza. The market goes till 2. They get till about 3 o'clock to clean up. So we want them to be able to run their show without several thousand people marching through their market. So
we'll show up after that.
Yes. Okay. And several local groups that often do beach and river cleanups on Earth Day, they've postponed those until Sunday so everyone can come out and participate in the March for Science and then still go pick up trash the following day. So think of it as Earth Weekend instead of Earth Day.
Works for me. Anything we missed? Where can people find out more about this? Where can people get in touch with the organizers or get involved?
We do have an open Facebook page. It's the March for Science Humboldt, and you can find information on volunteering there. We do need lots of volunteers for the day of the march. Mm-hmm. There's a form on there that you can sign up for to help with that. We also have a GoFundMe campaign that you can help donate because, unfortunately, these events are not without cost. So you can also find that information on that Facebook page. And then in regards to the GoFundMe campaign, we have a budget that we've projected that we would need to spend, and any money we raise above that, we're going to put into a fund to help send our students from Humboldt County to the State Science Fair next year.
Oh, cool.
So anything additional benefits the students of Humboldt County.
And our fundraising subcommittee has made several levels of a sponsorship, and there's going to be some really nice T-shirts with a Humboldt March for Science logo.
If you would like to donate to the Humboldt March for Science GoFundMe campaign, you can go on GoFundMe's website and search Humboldt March for Science.
Well, thanks very much for coming in, and I'll see you guys on Earth Day, if not before.
Yeah, you'll be there.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us, Scott.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jessica. Thanks, Ross.
This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Scott Greason. I've been your host for the past half hour. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again on the archive programs page of the station's website at khsu.org. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Tune in again next week at the same time for the Eco News Report.